Okay. Well, hello, everybody. And I'm very happy to welcome you to, at last, finally, another Identify as Being meeting. And you know, the way I've been handling this is to do kind of what I call a lecture meditation, and you can take notes as you go. And then if you have thoughts or questions, then we're probably in a good place to, wait a second. I've got to, microphone array. Yeah, I think I'm doing it correctly. It's a little bit heartbreaking when you have a program and then suddenly you realize that it wasn't recording. Just to let you know, we have some busy times coming up. Let's see, I have two keyboards here in front of me, and I'm trying to locate, well, maybe BL can help me locate the weekly schedule that Anne and Tuya prepare for us. We have a program, and I think it's on Glamour tomorrow at 5 o'clock, and then on Sunday, no, Monday, Saturday, sorry, we have New Moon meditation in the wee hours here, about 3 in the middle of the night, and then our EUN Esoteric United Nations meeting. What I have been doing, just to let you know, and you can obtain it from Makara, where BL is posting it, and also from our Moria Federation Esoteric Education link channel. Harold has been posting the same. I finished with the 6 stages of discipleship, and there are X number of programs for that. And now I'm working on something equally as important, is the introduction to the book Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1, Section 1, which is called Talks to Disciples. And it's on part two. I would just say the Tibetan's material is just so very valuable, and it's just impossible to have absorbed it with a light reading. We have to really study the things which is highly organized mind, highly organized and detailed mind have produced. So I'm hoping that in anticipation of 2025, when the new installment goes forth, roughly then, that you'll lay as good a foundation in your consciousness as you possibly can. And that will also, I suppose, how well we do with that, will determine what the Tibetan decides to do in terms of what he can give us. That's the thing, you know. There's no sense to offer us material that we just cannot assimilate. So what I'm trying to say to you and to myself is that there's a whole lot of assimilation, which is possible for us during the next slightly less than 4 years. And I'm hoping that we really do take it seriously, okay? That we'll be glad we did, and probably, you know, the majority of us will have some kind of new incarnation during the time that the third installment is going forth, completing Master DK's three-part series of what he calls bridging treatises, bridging treatises towards the knowledge of the new age. Well, we're again now, we'll be taking up an abstruse subject. It's very refined, it's very elusive, and it has a lot to do not with form, not with quality. It has to do with something far more fundamental, which comes from the essence of the monad. And it's my hope, of course, that we can begin to get some kind of sense of it. Let's see here. Gosh, where is this? I know it's somewhere here. Well, maybe this is it. And maybe this is it. Yeah, okay. So, you know how I like to do this. Basically, is it a lecture? In a way. Is it a meditation? Yes, in a way. And I do both. And you try to follow along the best you can in this very subtle subject, which basically comes out of the monad. The essence of the monad, the point within the triangle. That's where all this comes from. And we're going to get better and better at detecting these subtle points of tension that allow our consciousness to flip. Flip into what? You know, flip into, let's say, the true experience beyond the words. The experience of being. And of course, I tend to mention certain things over and over again. I certainly have to do it for myself. This morning, I was meditating a bit, and I found that I could get into it. Other times, I can't. It's just such a subtle change. You're looking at the same thing, and 1 minute, you know what you are as the substratum of the very thing you are perceiving, and other moments, it just looks ordinary. So maybe that's what the mystics meant by being in God and out of God. They had their own language for it, you know. And of course, Master DK's occult language is far more, I find it far more satisfactory now than I used to read all the mystical books, and I used to think they were so wonderful, and they are in their own way wonderful. They represent the Neptunian perspective. But along comes Master DK and enlarges even on that and begins to introduce also the Uranian perspective. And those two great planets have to do with the kind of transcendental realization for which we are all aiming. It can be frustrating at times. And then suddenly, there it is. But we want to make a science out of all this. It is a science. And we want to, at will, be able to enter the experience of being and not just identify with being, but identify as being, which is the title of this series that we're working through. Just want to say I'm happy to see you all here. We've got Michael, Crow, and BL, and Joe all helping us at various times. And want to just welcome Anna and Anne and Annette and Catherine. It's like we're picking up a few of the Australians now. Maybe you're either staying up very late or what? Francois and Heike and Joan, Karen, Leslie, Lorianne, Martine, Mayra Santos, a guest, Nesa, and Risto here in Finland, and Tia. It looks like Tuya is also here while doing many things simultaneously. Vivian, nice to see you, and Yvonne, and Anne Veronica so far. So great to see you here. And maybe you will get something out of this, and maybe I will too. So let's embark on our strangely languaged process. This is not the same language that Master DK uses. We might say that it has somehow more of the third ray in it than Master DK customarily uses. We have the abstract mind hopefully at work in some of these things, and eventually the intuition from the Buddhic plane, where now so many of the ashrams are finding their new location now for almost 100 years. So let's go together, step by step. I'm not going to write in too much. It's just I find under the circumstances, health-wise, it's just better to speak it rather than do too much stretching. But okay, so here we are. With our meeting for today, 8th of July, year 21. And, if what is required by the meditation seems at times a little difficult or strange, just go with it. Go with it and do the best that you can. So we begin by allowing ourselves or imagining ourselves to be the peasants you've heard of the practice of the presence of God. And in this case, that presence is having a lot to do with our planet, but it goes much further than that. So imaginatively think of yourself as the presence from which all things arise. Now that's already a fairly advanced perception. Really, it's an infusception, as I call it. But we will learn that all things that can be perceived have arisen out of us as a unitary, substanding being. And that's, in a way, a very unusual thought, because people like ourselves studying occultism, we're all wrapped up in the form. We're all wrapped up in the quality of the thing. Now, those are important things, form and quality. But not for the purpose of finding your, I'll call it, substandingness, your substandingness with regard to all possible perceptions. Someone like the Christ has achieved that. And the masters and high initiates are achieving that. There's just no place in all the universe where the essential you as a being is not. You are there. And in a way, there is no there. The illusion of distance and time and space. Well, they are illusions, however useful they may be in ordinary living. Now, attempt, in however you might do it, to enter into a state of contemplation, the third phase of meditation, a state of contemplation, or shall we call it a point of tension in which, as a presence, and finally the presence, you feel yourself pervading all you perceive. And this we have been calling infusception. So try to enter the contemplative state, and if you want to know what that's all about, please do read Alice Bailey's book, From Intellect to Intuition. She has a wonderful chapter and various references on contemplation. There are ever higher points of tension at which one can contemplate. The way, for instance, that Christ contemplates, or the great sage Ramakrishna, but those are beyond us. But they lead to the state of samadhi, which the practitioners have also listed as consisting of various lower and higher points of tension, or samadhis. I just flashed on me that word, although this is not really etymologically academic, the word same is in the word samadhi, samadhi. So what you're discovering is whatever you thought you were in the myopic world, in the great universal Mahamaya, is not really accurate. It's useful, it's cyclically repetitive forever, but it's not the reality of you. There really is, in the words of the poet Wordsworth, something far more deeply interfused. There really is. And first to discover it, and then to realize that it is you who are far more deeply, or who is, are. You're the one who is far more deeply interfused. The whole universe just cannot get rid of what you are. And that is forever. DK has referred to the phenomenal world as the phantasmagorical world. And he has looked at persons as phantasmagoria. Well, if people are phantasmagoria, what is more real than phantasmagoria? Now, make sure to ignore the form and quality of that which you infuse. That's probably not very good advice if you want to function within this world of the universal Mahamaya. But for the purposes of what we are pursuing, maybe it is good advice. Ignore getting preoccupied with the form and the quality of that which you are trying to infuse. And this is important. Be very still. And know that you are the infusing presence. If you fall into preoccupation with the form and with quality, well, you might learn something in the Mayavic world, but you will not be able to substand that which you are perceiving. That's what we want. We want to be able to substand, stand under, stand within at a deeper level. We want to be able to do that with regard to what we are apparently perceiving. Be patient. Oh, in this pursuit, one must be patient. And look for those opportunities when the possibility of flipping into your identity as the underlying one presents themselves. The underlying one. The substanding one. The all-pervading one. When you're looking for what you really are, the answer is liable to come more in those terms than I am such and such a personality or such an egoic lotus or, you know, all those individual things which pertain not only to your form and quality, but to your higher forms and higher qualities. But it's very important to be still. And not let your eyes, or the eyes of the mind, flit from thing to thing. It's important to extract the presence of beingness while holding the stillness. So as you begin, and at our stage, maybe it's just beginning, to identify as the underlying one, the pervading one, the ever-present one, the words could be endless. As you begin to do this, see if you can sense the life, the being, residing in the heart, which is the seat of life and being. If we can, it will transform our perception of all the many things that are found in the Mahamaya. It will make them our own. We will discover that all those things live in us. We work from the many to the one, and maybe from the one to the many, and sometimes we do not realize how very different they are. How very different are the many from the one. And it's a very subtle shift, very subtle. So we try to meet all infusceptions as if life is in the heart, as if being is in the heart. The heart is a peculiar organ reflecting both the first and second rays. It's a kind of unique ownership of all that is perceived when one is working through the heart. And the great sameness dawns upon us, even though normal perception reveals multifarious differences. Try to realize that all other, well, maybe I call this intimations, but maybe it should be estimations also. Intimations or estimations of your identity are myopic, subject to maya. When we say, I'm this, I'm that, even something quite high. And those estimations, even though in the realm of Mahamaya, they must forever be dealt with. They are incomplete representations of your true identity as being. We don't want to settle for less. And everything less than being is indeed less, and ultimately misleading. Think of the Christ and how he is destined for a while to follow path number 5 on the way of higher evolution. The ray path, as it is called. How does he think of himself? Does he think of himself as a form? Or when he says to himself, I am a ray of love, wisdom, how does he visualize that self, which he is? How do you visualize your ever more liberated sense of identity. So the advice is here, be willing to abandon your various myopic identities. You know, I am the personality, I am the soul, I am the triad, I am the monad, I am. Those are all partial. Be willing to abandon your various myopic identities, which usually the human being fixes upon as if they were his or her true self. Be willing to abandon your various myopic identities for real identity. As the presence, which is ultimately and in universe, the universal logos. You see, in a way, there's nothing that can stop you from forever being the greatest and only state of beingness within universe and beyond. That's a hard one to realize. A little more. Try to realize and to possess and to identify with or as the mind as it is in Christ. Which at his very high state is a blend of love and identification. You can wonder, what does the Christ see or feel or experience when he looks on at someone or some being? Of course, right now, to know that, really know it, is beyond us, but one can imagine a bit. The love helps the identification. The identification helps the love. And it occurs to me that when the Christ delivers the first initiation, the birth of the Christ in the heart. He takes that initiation all over again with the candidate. Now that is a telling of a very high state of identification. If we succeed in taking the second initiation, we will have that interim period before the third degree to really study, speculate upon, think deeply about what identification is. So, temporarily leave behind any preoccupation with what I will call myopic particularities. Myopic particularities, which distinguish one thing from another, and one function from another, and have to do with our normal world and the dynamics of higher worlds. Temporarily, try to leave those behind. And you can return to them later. Your major interests for the purposes of this kind of work is the being which you are. The, we can call it also, the infusing, infusiving, pervader. That's what we're after now. Obviously, we will also live a normal life and handle many details. But we're looking for something substanding all of those details. Of course, it's important to keep one's balance while entering into the state of substandingness. A lot of people lose their balance and they ignore the world that has to be dealt with. So that's not really allowed for the student of occultism. I want to say that not only is all you perceive utterly, and I would say forever, in essence, utterly familiar in essence, but even more, and this is a statement. There is nothing you can ever perceive which you have not forever being, for which you have not been forever. Now, ponder on that. There are no, in essence, there are no strangers. There are no others. There is nothing with which you are not only utterly familiar, in essence, but even more, there is nothing you can ever perceive which you have not forever been. Now that's going to require a lot of pondering. There's no such thing as meeting someone for the first time. Within absolute infinitude, that someone exists. And you are that supra-universal infinitude. We are all familiar to each other, and far more, we all forever have been each other in whatever form the apparent other manifests, apparent other. So, in short, through infusception, it's a good little mantra. Be whatever you perceive. Know it somehow. Know it. Be what you perceive, whatever kingdom you are dealing with in your perception. A low kingdom or a high. Be whatever you perceive. Not in form, not in quality, but in essence. And when you perceive, we do it all the time, of course. You do not dwell on the particularities of the perception. I could pick up any object or note any demonstration and start going into the detail of what I see there. But for this kind of purpose, those things are not relevant. So maybe I can get this across, I don't know. When you perceive, and when you're working in this way, which we realize is not always, you do not dwell on the particularities of perception, but there is a kind of, I'm calling it a ricochet back to the state of being resident in your heart. It flips right back to your heart center. Where your heart center gets engaged. And then you know that all that appears to be taking place, and here's another one to really meditate on, all that appears to be taking place, so many, many things, all that is taking place within you. And that is given also in the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. Now, it's so different in a way from our normal particular perception that we might use the right words, but still not know what we're talking about. It's all taking place within you, within me, which is, well, those two are really the same thing. Essence. So I often repeat as a mantra, I look around, then I focus, I get still, and I say, all within me all within me. I say it until, if it does come, until the flip comes. And here we are, still in the sign Cancer. This is the 8th of July. And we can use that very meaningful Cancer mantra the whole is seen as one. The whole is seen as one. I am the whole, I am the one. We know this experientially and not just as something we toss off as an interesting mantra. The whole is seen as one. Okay, then, that's our little lecture meditation. Maybe not so little, and filled with profound things, I think, that have to be pondered in order to get to the other side of the words, where the experience really does take over. And, you know, I'm not saying that this is a terribly practical realization when you have to handle the myopic world, but it does something to the way you handle this, a myopic world. does something. And that something, I think, is bringing us closer and closer to reality. Reality is one of those funny concepts. It can be used in a very concrete way and also in a very abstract way, reality. And if you, in your spirit, you thirst, you hunger for reality, then you'll give some time to these abstruse considerations, which are normally way beyond the pale of the average, even quite efficient thinker, still caught up in the world of form and quality. But you'll realize that there's something more to be achieved, something more to be realized, yes. There is an atmic state on the fifth subplane from above, third subplane from below, and it is called realization. And one of my friends joked, it means seeing things with real eyes, he said. So try to find some time in the myopic world to ponder the non-myopic world. And I think the reward will be eventually considerable. Well, I'm going to turn this over, I think, to looks like BL. I think Joe has had to take leave of us, and so BL, you can help me if you will. If there's any kind of response or anything to be said.
Okay, nothing yet, but yes.
I don't blame you, you know. I don't blame you. It's one of my friends with whom I disagree said, your students will never understand what you're trying to talk about. But that's not true. It's all inherent within us, you know. And we have to come to the time when one day, like the masters, our consciousness will be focused on the within the spiritual triad, and even beyond, the time will come, it will be focused within the monad. And then it'll be more than a word. The monadic awareness will mean something to us.
Michael, Yvonne has a question. Let me see if I can, you know, if you guys have a question, you can raise your hands.
If you want to speak, you know, you can speak or write, you know, whichever way it goes.
Okay, Michael, you said that then you know that all that appears to be taking place is taking place within you. I live in the United States, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I'm watching CNN and all that's going on. It seems like this chaos, this war that's going on with the political parties and the lie. So basically you're saying that all that is really taking place within me. Instead of looking out there, I got to look within me and see what's going on.
I'm saying, yeah, Yvonne, something to that effect. I see, I'm not just thinking of ourselves as persons, as personalities, and in the world of Maya, obviously this person is different from that person. All those distinctions prevail. So in the world of Maya, there are selfish people, there are unselfish people, you know, and it doesn't mean that all persons, whoop, be careful, someone has their, something happened there. It doesn't mean that we're all thinking the same thing as persons. I'm going beyond that to say that in the state of identification, who else is there except the one me? And when Master DK says, naught is but me, I think we will find ourselves responsible in the end for the phenomenal good or bad. As individuals, no. In Maya, no. Where the good and bad apply. But as that something that underlies everything, well, there's just no other being, you know. So one has to depersonalize those thoughts and lift them into a higher state of understanding. I mean, if Christ says, I am the light of the world, what does he mean? If he says, I am the love of the world, what does he mean? See, he's not identifying with the form. It's something much more real and less filled with particular differences. So yeah, I don't think there's a thing in universe that transpires for which, or in relation to which, the one being is not the player, the actor, the only game in town, the only one that is behind it all. And I know that's a big stretch from the way we usually think, but that's what I'm working on, and that's what I'm trying to realize. The difference between this world of illusion with all of its little perceptions and the world of reality, which has the one substanding being. You know what I mean by substanding? It's beneath, it supports the one substanding being. That's what we are. And it takes a while, I think, for me and for you to slowly, for all of us, to slowly begin to realize the implications of that idea. So not personally responsible, no, but ontologically responsible. Okay, that when you use a word like ontological, it means in relation to being, to the study of being, in our beingness, we are responsible. I hope that's a little clear. Okay, I don't hear anything right now. BL, are you there?
Sorry, I thought I'd unmuted myself. I'm trying to walk and chew bubble gum at the same time, and apparently I'm not capable.
I know.
Okay. Ann Parker says, helpful for me when trying to perceive is the idea of surrendering the little self, which includes thoughts and ideas of self and more. Doing this seems to expand perception.
Yeah, perception. And basically that's what DK tells us. Surrender, preoccupation with the little self. And actually he says it in a way that is even just more direct. He says, take your eyes off your little self. Because when you have your eyes on your little self, you're not decentralized. You basically are thinking about everything that's going on in that little self. And we are looking for something that comes with, and I'll use the word, isolated unity. Isolated unity, which is quite fully achieved by the time of the fifth initiation, but which begins in earnest as we start working towards the third degree. So isolated unity means you manage to isolate the unity or the oneness substanding, underlying everything. And if you're always looking at that little self, you know, checking up on this and checking up with that, well, okay, it's a stage, it's okay. In a way, it's got to be done. In a way, we have to make those improvements. But for the purposes of this kind of relatively strange pursuit that we're involved in, it's not the most important thing. Matter of fact, it's important to kind of dismiss it and let the heart take over. Maybe there's a few experiences you've had in life or visualizations where this realization of the one actually came into focus. Well, if you have such, you might begin right there and use it as a point of departure to trigger an ongoing realization of the one, which you are in all things. You might start right there. I have a few memories, and I find that when I imagine those memories, it begins to work, and I can go on to other things. But you know that thing that I've talked about, that ricochet, like a bullet might ricochet, you know, that ricochet back into the heart center. That's, I think, an important one. And when that happens, you have a lot better chance of perceiving this one that ultimately we all are pursuing in our lowly, myopic state, where we have forgotten so much about the higher points of tension through which we have descended. So if it works, use it. That's all I can say.
Okay, and Vivian says, when my mother died, I had such an experience. She was in Australia, I was in England. I knew in an instant that she was in everything, every blade of grass, every drop of sunlight.
Oh, that's a beautiful thing. And it's true, of course. Ultimately true. Some people might consider, oh, well, you know, you're just escaping, someone is escaping into some beautiful thought, and it's just an escape from the harsh reality of death and all that. But no, it's real. It's real. I'm reminded, you know, I don't know if any of you ever saw Ken Burns, he's a filmmaker, his series on the Civil War in America. It's really well done, and you get the flavor of the battles and who was fighting and their thoughts and their letters and all that. There was a man in the very first battle, very first engagement between the North and the South, and he had intimations of his death, and he spoke about how if he were killed, he would be there and in all things. His name was, strangely, was Sullivan Ballou. He was on the side of the North, it turned out, and he was killed, and that is the letter he wrote to his sweetheart, or, you know, whatever the relationship was. So these are real metaphysical realizations. And although many people are likely to dismiss them as exaggerated, when you really start thinking philosophically, they turn out to be true. So the experience that you had is an anchor. And I don't know whether, you know, how it is for you to recapture that experience, but when such an experience can be recaptured, it can be also extended. Let me put it like that. Thank you.
Martine says, may be easier to live it or be it than to talk about and find the right words. Thank you for this stimulating program.
Yeah, thanks, Martine. Well, sure, the words are never enough. But if the words can make a bridge, you know, sometimes I say, why is DK writing at all? Complaining often about the stricture that words put upon things, if he did not hope that a bridge could be made to the real experience. So if words help, great. And if they don't help, then okay, there must be other ways as well. Somehow we all have to be there, and we will be. We all will be identifying where the masters now identify within the spiritual triad and beyond. These will not be areas forever closed to us. They will open up. Thank you.
Lori Ann says, my impression, it's as if time stands still, and with it, all that is transitory ceases. Then illusion disappears.
That's well said. And that thing about time standing still, you see, if one doesn't allow the mind to flit here and flit there, and the eyes go here and there, and perceptions keep changing and so forth, then something stands still. And in that stillness, we may discover what being really is. I was always such an academic, you know, that I never thought I would, toward the end of my life, be talking about being of all things. I was interested in the nitty-gritty, every little function of every little thing, as DK would report it. But something happened. I read a book, somehow got a hold of it, whether it was in the translation the Tibetan recommended, I don't think so, but it was called The Pressed Jewel of Discrimination. And in the Sanskrit, Viveka Kudamani. It means the same thing. Viveka is discrimination. And from the book, I learned something about the discrimination between Maya and that which was truly real. And that was a long time ago. And I'm grateful for having run into that book. I still keep that ratty copy of, you know, just a little book produced in India, which is basically falling apart. But I think the Tibetan recommended that everybody have that book in the translation by an author called, I think it was Chatterjee. Somehow he liked that translation the best. He recommended a few books, you know, the Bhagavad Gita, the New Testament, The Light of the Soul, that is, the Yoga Sutras, and the Pressed Jewel of Discrimination, Viveka Kudamani. We will find our way, friends, if we're willing to be very subtle in our perception. We can't just go for everything that is most obvious and imagine that that can really indicate reality. No, something far more subtle is at work. So, well stated what you said. It was good. Yeah.
And then Heike says to Vivian, "That's beautiful. I had the same experience when my mother died. Since then, I feel her essence in everything in nature, like her essence stayed here for the benefit of all."
Okay. It's good, really good to have those kinds of experiences as anchor points for even further depth in the realization. So if you've got something reliable where that flip happens, just see if you can use it to extend your realization. Is that it then, Bia?
No. And Veronica says, "Most of the time we were contemplating, an image of fractal came in mind. This sameness of a fractal, when one of them changes, the whole picture changes. I know that all this is in form, trying to explain what is not of form, but this came in my mind."
Okay. you know, I'm all for whatever works and whatever really seems suggestive of the subtle experience. We do have the difference between the garment of God and God behind the garment. I think if you read the Ray 5 Law of Repulse, perhaps, or is it the integration formula? One of those old commentary things about Ray 5, you'll see that we human beings who are so subject to the fourth and fifth rays at this time have to look beyond the garment of God to that unitary something that is God itself. Whatever works.
And then Heike has her hand up.
Yes, I wanted to say it was not about my mother. It was about Mother Teresa.
Wait, I lost Teresa. That.
It was not about my mother, feeling her everywhere or her essence, but Mother Teresa. When she died. And I can, anytime when I think of it, I feel her just everywhere. It's like her essence. And I have the same experience with the Dalai Lama. I can feel his essence sometimes, just, wow. It's like he just came along, even though he isn't physically here. And just feeling the essence, because I have been with him for a while and I know how he feels, how this energy feels, and suddenly I feel it somewhere. So that's interesting. I don't know why I feel it there, but it's always very beautiful.
Well, you know, Antuya and I had a similar experience in Tallinn, the Estonian capital city. Dalai Lama was visiting, and there's definitely a presence, and you feel it even from far away. So again, we need these anchor points which trigger the experience for us, and then we can more widely extend the experience if we have a reliable trigger point. That's how I think of it. So thanks, Heike, for reporting that. And I can understand those are two illustrious high souls, and they really have something that communicates itself to people in a good way. Yeah.
And that's all I see right now.
Okay. Well, I can't say I'm sorry particularly. It's we've had a good meditation, I think, and good responses. And I think tomorrow it is glamour, isn't it, Bia?
Yes, I believe so. I have it open and then I hit it. Yes, tomorrow is glamour at 5 p.m. Yeah. And then, as you said, the new moon is going to be at 4 a.m. GMT. And the EUN conference for mini conference for participants is going to be at 7 p.m. on Saturday.
Right. Very good, very good. Well, friends, I'm happy that you have joined us, and all I can say is a little bit at a time. We're not necessarily going to have the master's consciousness overnight. but we have to be on the right track. And I think that comments and so forth have indicated that we're moving along the right track. So all of us on the communications team, wishing you a lot of love and many blessings, deep studies and deepening meditation, and somehow a way, whether it's educationally or in whatever way, that you can apply what you learn and help the ageless wisdom get a stronger hold on the consciousness of humanity. So we'll be talking to you, and this will be going up before long on Makara and on our YouTube channel. We'll see you before long. And I guess I'll stop the recording, but someone else who's now the host will have to do that, okay? We'll see how that works. Here it goes. Okay.